Susan Warner is a sleep and feeding specialist with more than 20 years' experience helping Australian families through the challenges of those precious but really exhausting early months. Driven by a belief that a full tummy is the foundation of a settled sleeping baby, and frustrated by the lack of quality bottle options she could confidently recommend, Susan founded Little Cooey, an innovative range of baby feeding products designed to support breastfeeding, reduce colic, and give babies the best possible start. Today, she's here to share her story and her passion for better baby feeding. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you very much for having me.
Susan, we mentioned in our introduction that you've been a sleep and feeding specialist for over 20 years. What drew you to this field?
Well, I've been specialising in child development as my main area of focus for over 30 years now, and it's always been a really strong passion of mine. And I came to realise very early on in the piece that parents are struggling more and more every day with feeding and sleeping. And it's generally because of social media and the amount of conflicting information that they're actually getting
online.
There's
a lot of conflicting information now, isn't there? Because my children are all parents now. And I just said there's so much social media information that they don't listen to their gut instinct anymore.
Spot on. And we really are losing that instinctive questioning that we get and we would have got previously.
Absolutely.
Without that external noise that parents are now being afflicted by constantly scrolling on social media and seeing all of these different judgments and options and opinions.
Yes.
Everyone's trying to do their best, but we really are starting to lose that basics, especially around the biology side of things.
Absolutely. Now, your little business that you've made is called Little Cooey. What does that mean and how did you come up with the name?
Yeah, well, there are actually very few products on the Australian market that have any relevance to being Australian. Most of our baby products actually come from overseas. So because it was actually designed and engineered here, right here in Brisbane actually, I wanted to bring that Australian feel. So I went for the iconic Australian...
The bush cooey.
Obviously the kookaburra is the logo, but it was actually my son that came up with the name. So it's actually been a bit of a family affair there.
Oh, well done. Well done, son. Okay, so you noticed a real gap in the bottle market, and what was frustrating you about that, of what was available to parents?
Yeah, I've always recommended the Pigeon Narrow Neck bottle for the last 20 years because it actually has been the best option that we've had on the Australian market. But between a growing concern around the plastics with the uptake of UV and heated sterilisation, as well as minimal venting on the teat, and then it went to a Y cut at 6 months. I was forever having to explain to parents about keeping the cap on loose and then having to swap between teat brands.
Oh, things have got so complicated.
It got very complicated. So it just became a really frustrating discussion that I was having with parents on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, you think in the very old days it were glass bottles and you could just boil them
That's it, absolutely.
Yeah, so you got to a point where you thought, I'm just going to create my own. So what was the one thing that was the biggest hurdle there for you? You know, it's one thing having an idea and entirely different bringing it to fruition. What was the hardest thing in that process of bringing your concept to market?
Well, it took me about 4 years to go from initial thought process to actually bring something viable to market. There's been a lot of hurdles along the way. So from obviously engineering the teat and making sure that the valve works and picking a bottle material that was going to be that differential between, a generalised plastic, but then obviously not the concerns
but
that parents have
about glass
as well.
How does that process happen? Do you go to plastics or company or?
I started actually with focusing on the teat, because the teat for me is
the key.
And that's the fixer to all of my problems that I was having. So I actually found an engineering company first, came to them with, this is my idea, how do we bring this to life to make this work to what I had visualised. Once I had a working component there, I was able to go off and sort of seek options to the bottle material itself.
Yeah, because I can remember I had my first child in Kenya and we worked for a British multinational then. So a lot of my baby products came from Boots in the UK, and they had a really lovely teat that was completely different from anything else. It was shaped like a nipple would be after it's in the baby's mouth.
MAM? Was it the MAM brand? Well,
I just can't remember what it was, but it was great. And it just, we never ever had any problems with it at all. So you've had your teats tested by infant feeding labs in the US. What does that process involve?
So my main issue around what's available on the Australian market actually comes down to teat flow. Anything that's marketed as slow flow can be anything from 5 mils to 40 mils. And that was how pace feeding and that has come to be as well. So I wanted something that was genuinely slow flow, that I could actually market a product to parents that was concise and accurate. So I worked with the company over in America to actually find the right flow, the right hole size that was actually going to slow everything down, so that, again, babies aren't going to preference the bottle over a breast, and it's going to have
That's
the same biological instinctive feel to it as well.
And especially now in these days, I think when so many mums are working so soon after they've had babies.
Correct.
And they're worried about the amount of breast milk that they're going to have if the baby's not stimulating that breast milk all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they're having to complement
it
with...
Chop and change between, absolutely.
So what's the difference between the patent pending valve and why venting matters so much for the colic, wind and reflux?
Yeah, sure. So many of the bottles and teats on the market don't actually have a functional vent. So again, we've got lots of gulping, gassy. If I've got a gassy, unsettled, refluxy, colicky baby, we're obviously going to have a lot of hard time keep settling them and around sleep. So that's why I was always fixing the feeding to fix the sleep side of things. We've also got, a plastic funnel sitting directly into baby's milks, which I have grave concerns about with the uptake of heat and UV sterilization as well, with regards to microplastics actually sitting directly in a baby's milk.
And that's a scary thing that we didn't even think of years ago.
Absolutely. And at them, I also laugh that, parents could go and buy the glass bottle but still has a plastic funnel in it. Sort of defeats the purpose in my mind. So our vent is actually incorporated within the teat. It's very obvious. It sits like a duckbill valve. So the idea behind the duckbill valve is very similar to the concept of a breast pump. So as you're building pressure inside the bottle with the baby sucking, the valve opens, transfers the air back into the bottle rather than going through the teat and into Bub's tummy.
Yes, and stopping all those hours of...
much easier, absolutely. So they're much easier to burp.
Walking babies around, yes.
100%.
Yeah, exactly.
We're getting really good feedback from parents that are using our bottles, that they see a very quick difference to them being a lot easier to burp afterwards and a lot calmer and a lot more settled. Which was exactly why...
And happy babies,
happy families. That's exactly right, which is exactly why I designed the product in the first place.
Yeah. And you're saying that your bottles are made from PA.
Yes.
And for parents and myself who aren't scientists, what does that mean in practical terms?
Yeah. So 89% of the bottles on the Australian market are PP plastic. From a microplastic concern, it only has 100 to 110 degrees in terms of the heat resistance. So every time it's sterilized, it's taking it to a full capacity. Polyamide is actually a nylon-based polymer. So it automatically offers a much higher temperature resistance of over 180 degrees. So that means even just during sterilization, the molecules and the polymer itself isn't going to be impacted. That's exactly right. So it's not going to degrade. Where like normal PP plastic bottles, you'll actually see after a few months of sterilizing, they'll go cloudy.
Yes.
And that's actually the additive that's being added to the PP plastic to make it more clarity, that starts to break down. So the cloudiness is actually at degrading and shedding the bits that we don't want to be.
It's terrible as a mum with older kids now. You look back and you think, oh my goodness, what did I do?
So PP plastic bottles would be asking parents to replace those every 3 to 6 months. Where with PA, because of that higher temperature resistance and the nylon base, you're going to get more longevity. So long term, it's actually a cheaper option.
Okay. One of the things we spoke about earlier was, how mums are scared that a bottle will cause their baby to reject the breast. And what's the message that you've got for them?
Look, it has definitely been a concern, and it has definitely been a message that I have personally given parents previously myself. I eat because obviously if we introduce a bottle before 8 weeks, there's the risk of preferencing the bottle. And that's again how pace feeding and that came to be as well. And again, one of the reasons why my newborn teat is literally down to 4.98 mils per minute. What we want is babies to use the same suck, swallow, breathe pattern that they use on the breast and transfer that to the bottle, where a flow rate of, say, another brand that's offering, say, 20 mils per minute, rather than suck, swallow, breathe, they're just suck, swallowing. They're not getting that rotational thing, which again has a lot of impact on their myofascial structures and their tongue placement as well.
Yes, yeah, it's a big thing. And I'm kind of thinking back in my memory of what you would probably call a fast-paced bottle now, even though I breastfed, but, you know, sometimes you had to use bottles.
Yes. Of
baby sort of almost gulping all the time as it was coming through too fast.
Absolutely. And then that's how, the pace feeding has come
to be. That's something I want to ask you about, because that certainly wasn't around in those days. So what is pace feeding and why do you see it as a workaround rather than a real solution?
Great question. So pace feeding is actually where we hold the bottle horizontally. So the concept is that we would only half fill the teat with milk. So it makes it more challenging and more difficult to actually transfer the milk from the bottle.
And you can do that because of the valve in the teat?
Ordinarily, it's not something that a bottle is actually designed to do.
No, because it was keeping the teat full, wasn't
correct.
It?
Correct. So any bottle and any brand, having been through the process myself, to pace feed, you're actually eliminating the whole physics of any bottle brand. So any bottle that has venting and is deemed to be anticholic, by pace feeding, you're actually eliminating the actual physics of what that was trying to achieve in the first place. So the concept was, if we do the pace feeding, we're going to have less bottle preference over going back onto the breast, because obviously breastfeeding is a little bit more challenging and that. So it is a workaround. It's a compensation strategy rather than actually solving a problem. So with my bottles as well, because the flow's so slow, it means we don't have to worry about the workaround of pace feeding. We can actually just feed normally, and it allows a baby to naturally regulate their suck, swallow, breathe pattern, where pace feeding takes that opportunity away from them.
Ah, now it's all clear. So now, not only have you got the new concept in your bottles and teats, you've got a new weaning spoon as well.
I do.
Now, I always thought a spoon was a spoon, but I see some flat spoons out there. But tell me about your weaning spoon. What's wrong with the spoons most parents are currently using?
Yes, so there's a lot of wide silicone spoons coming out with the silicone sets now. And what we're finding is they're too wide, too deep and too hard. So when you go to put a spoon like that, or with a really high lip on the front, when you put that into a baby's mouth, you're having to use their upper lip to actually remove the food from the spoon. We're actually back in the day, and you probably remember the Heinz Baby Basic spoon. Mine is pretty much just an upgrade of the Heinz Baby Basic spoon back to your nice flat silicone flexible tip. So that actually allows the spoon to go directly into bub's mouth. So then we're actually using their palate and the tongue to actually remove the food from the spoon. And again, that's allowing all of that oral networking, all of those muscles to actually be engaged in the experience, which then obviously has benefits for chewing and your speech as well. Where when we're using these really hard silicone spoons and we're leaving half the food behind on the spoon or having to use their lips, we're actually sort of removing the whole benefit of spoon feeding. Yeah.
Now, the other thing was baby-led weaning is very popular right now, and it's a new concept for me. Oh. But what are your thoughts, and when can it become a problem?
I'm not a fan.
It just seems odd to me.
It is. I'm not a fan of baby-led weaning as a standalone, as a feeding option. In my personal experience, a six-month-old baby doesn't have the hand-eye coordination, the dexterity, the patience to consume the type, volume and quality of food that's actually required to actually fill their tummy, to keep that hunger instinct
I'm
at bay,
with you, I think,
to actually sleep. So I'm all for a balance. I'm all for, let's actually realize they're still babies. Let's still help them in the process. So let's use a spoon. Let's get some food into their tummy. And then we can offer as many age-appropriate finger foods afterwards to explore.
Yes.
And if anything extra happens to go in, it's an added bonus.
See, I think that's going back to the
good old-fashioned, old-fashioned parenting. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about the feed-sleep connection and you've, your other little business of Happy Baby Consultancy. Now, in that, you've often said fed is best. What can you tell us about the Happy Baby Consultancy and the families you work with there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm finding a lot with my day-to-day interactions with parents that babies are just hungry. Like, it is crazy. And I can't...
My baby's not sleeping,
absolutely. So when a parent comes to me and say, look, we're having a really hard time with sleep, my baby's not sleeping, my first go-to is I look at the biology. What your baby saying isn't working for them, because sleep actually shouldn't be challenging. Sleep is a natural, instinctive, basic function that we have to do for the basic neurological survival of a human.
Well, even as an adult, you know, if you're having one of those nights where you're having trouble sleeping, and I can't speak for everyone else, but I find if I go and have some nice, a cup of warm milk or something like that, it just, you know, helps you settle down. Yep,
yeah. Absolutely. So I'm finding that I have to go and fix what I refer to as the tummy variable first and foremost. You know, so there is a lot, again, of strong opinions out there in terms of, you know, breast is best, or food before one's just for fun, baby-led weaning, you know, all those things.
All the slogans.
All the slogans. And we're actually, our babies aren't getting the nutrition that they need. So they're going to keep waking, looking for fuel sourcing, because biologically they do not want to touch their fat stores. Their fat stores are incredibly important because they need that storage in order to get through growth spurts.
Yeah, and we know how quickly they grow
on a daily basis. Yeah. So if they're lacking in fuel sourcing, as I would refer to it, their body biologically won't allow them to sleep because they're vulnerable.
Yes.
So I have to fix the tummy. I have to fix the feeding, which is why the bottles come into play, which is why the spoon and all of my feeding utensils have come into play. The tools make a huge difference to this tummy variable. And once I fix the tummy variable, sleep's easy.
Makes sense to me. So once the feeding is sorted, what does that change look like for a family? Happy families.
Happy family, absolutely. So once feeding is sorted, parent behavioural changes are quick. Once parents actually understand the simple concept that sleep's a biological experience, not an emotional one, a baby arrives into the world knowing how to eat and sleep. We have to do both every day for just basic survival. Once I get parents back in tune and I'm back in line to what their babies are trying to communicate, everything else is pretty smooth sailing from there. I just have to have a look at what parent props are being used, what's helping, what's hindering. And again, once parents understand about, you know, we have one brain, two functions. We have an awake brain and a sleeping brain. Our awake brain, we use our senses. We see, we hear, we touch, we smell, we taste, and for little people, sucking. So if babies go into an active sleep state using sensory input, the sympathetic nervous system has a harder time sending the signal to reach deep sleep. So once I remove the white noise and the red lights and the shushing machines and the dummies and the snoo and the rockers and the bouncers, and we get back to the basics of how sleep happens naturally, it's a game changer.
That's really fantastic. It must be such a revelation to some new mums, just to kind of get rid of all that, get back to basics.
Back to basics, that's the key.
Susan, what's the one piece of advice you wish every new parent heard before their baby arrived?
It's about trying to ignore as much of 21st century external noise as you possibly can.
We're back to that again.
Honestly, we are born, or we have as parents, or as mums specifically, intuition. And that's why we've survived for generations really well in my mind. So it's about honing in on those instincts again. But I also want babies to come out into the world and have multiple skill sets. I love a baby that can breastfeed, bottle feed, take a spoon, do finger foods, you know, sleep in different environments, sleep without white noise. The more skill sets and the more opportunities we offer in the early days, the more smooth sailing the whole parenting and baby experience
makes
is
sense.
Because we can meet their needs at every point in turn as they grow and develop.
That sounds good. Now, Susan, where can listeners find the Little Cooey products and connect with Happy Baby Consultancy?
Yep, both are we're online. So Little Cooey is just www.littlecooey.com.au, and it's happybabyconsultancy.com.au as well.
Well, Susan, it's been an eye-opening conversation, from the realities of the bottle market to the fascinating link between feeding and sleep. You've given our mums and dads so much to think about, and and me too. Whether you're not that I'm a breastfeeding mum anymore, but whether you're a breastfeeding mum, bottle feeding, or navigating the world of solids, there's something here for every parent, really. So to find out more, head to, as Susan said, head to littlecooey.com and happybabyconsultancy.com.au. And for more podcasts like this on health and wellbeing, head to 1015.com.au.